Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, friend, and welcome to the Renaissance English History Podcast, the original Tudor history podcast telling stories of Tudor England since 2009. We are also part of the Agora Podcast Network, and I am your host, Heather Tusco. I'm a storyteller who makes history accessible because I believe it's a pathway to understanding who we are, our place in the universe, and being so much more deeply in touch with our own humanity. It is Women's History Month, still all month long it is. And we are talking about different aspects of women's history. So members and patrons got an episode this week on women in medicine. And that talked about kind of mystics and herbalism and midwifery and stuff like that. And this episode here for all of us is on different women in power. So one of the things that's very interesting about the 16th century is that we do start to see the first women in roles of power, not just in England with the first Queen Regnant with Mary I, but also throughout Europe. A couple of years ago, I say a couple, time goes so fast. In 2016, Sarah Gristwood wrote a book called Game of Queens. And I had her on the show. I'll find the episode and link to it. And she talked about how this period in particular was so unique with this emphasis on humanism, on the Reformation. There was this period where women really were stepping into their own power. There were cases where, for example, a king was taken prisoner and then his sister or his wife had to rule. Catherine of Aragon was the regent for Henry VIII when he was fighting in France. There are so many of these stories in the 16th century. And women were educated at rates they had not been up until that point, and also would not be again for several centuries afterwards, too. This was like this little period of this shining bright light for women in power that we didn't see again for a couple of hundred years afterwards. I certainly wouldn't go so far as to call it feminism as we know it. I don't like putting modern ideas onto people who wouldn't have understood or necessarily embraced them. I don't want to speak for that. I wouldn't like it if 500 years from now somebody said, oh, Heather, she was a, I don't know, something that I've never even considered. If there was a word for, I don't know, something that I do, I can't even think right now, maybe a word for people who really like road trips, a road trippianism. Oh, Heather, she was a practicing road trippianism. Like, no, I don't, what? You know, so I don't like to go back and put modern ideas. I see these things all the time. It was like, was Anne Boleyn the first feminist and things like that? I'm not a fan of that. I don't like speaking for people, especially putting these kind of modern ideas that we've come up with in the last 150, 200 years onto people for whom they would have had no reference for it. But that aside, Heather just went on a tangent there. The 16th century was very unique in seeing the rise of a number of women in unique positions of power, not just queens, not just in politics, but in education, but in the arts, but in literature, lots of places. So today we are going to do a survey. We are going to do a survey of women in power in the Tudor period. So today we are going to delve into the complexities of female sovereignty and influence amidst the still very patriarchal fabric of Tudor society. And we're going to shed light on the lives of those remarkable women who, through birthright, matrimonial alliances, or sheer force of will, carved a niche of power in a world that was still very much predisposed to silencing them. The Tudor dynasty, of course, inaugurated by Henry VII's triumph on the battlefield at Bosworth, laid the groundwork for a century of monumental transformation across England. This period was characterized by the Renaissance, the Reformation, the expansion into the Americas, exploration, also, of course, witnessed the intricate dance of power in the hands of its queens. In a society where the levers of power were traditionally wielded by men, and in fact, you know, they say this a lot, that the last time England had even attempted to have a female queen would have been Matilda in the 12th century, and that kind of had a whole civil war going along with it. So there was not a lot of precedent for powerful women queens of England. I guess Boudica might be an exception, but she was way before all of this. So the notion of female sovereignty was not just revolutionary, but fraught with challenges. The ascent of women to positions of authority was often met with skepticism, if not outright opposition, challenging these women to navigate the treacherous waters of Tudor politics with cunning diplomacy and resilience. So let's start with the Queen's Regnant. Elizabeth I is, of course, the most obvious one. Her reign, often hailed as the Golden Age, exemplifies the zenith of female power in Tudor England, ascending to the throne in a period rife with religious discord and external threats. Elizabeth's political savvy and judicious governance cemented her legacy as one of England's most formidable monarchs. Her decision to remain the Virgin Queen was a strategic masterstroke, allowing her to use marriage negotiations as a diplomatic tool while maintaining autonomy over her reign. Elizabeth's adept navigation through the treacherous political landscapes of her time, from quelling the threat of the Spanish Armada to fostering the flourishing of English arts and culture, underscored the potential for female sovereignty to not just match, but actually transcend the achievements of male counterparts. Mary I's path to the throne was no less dramatic, marked by her perseverance against the attempts to disinherit her and the public's wavering loyalty. Her reign was often overshadowed by her religious fervor and the moniker Bloody Mary, revealing a complex relationship of female leadership grappling with the expectations and limitations imposed by a Protestant majority. Mary's efforts to restore Catholicism in England, while controversial, do show the depth of her conviction and the inherent challenges of steering a nation's religious course against the tide of public opinion. Her marriage to Philip II of Spain, while an attempt to solidify Catholic influence, further illuminates the delicate balance that Tudor queens had to maintain between personal autonomy and political alliances. In both Elizabeth and Mary's reigns, we witnessed the embodiment of female power in a period where such a concept was both groundbreaking and highly contentious. Their stories are rich with political intrigue and personal dilemmas and indomitable spirit, and they pave the way for a deeper exploration of the multifaceted roles that Tudor women played in shaping the course of English history. As we delve further into the lives of more remarkable women, we uncover, of course, not just the trials that they faced, but the enduring legacy they forged in a world that was only just beginning to recognize the power of a queen. In the shadows of the throne and the clamor of the court, a cadre of formidable women exerted profound influence on the Tudor period, shaping the dynasty's destiny from behind the scenes. Their stories are often overlooked in the narratives of kings and battles, but they reveal the intricate web of familial loyalty, political acumen, and personal ambition that underpinned the Tudors. Let's start with Margaret Beaufort, the matriarch's masterstroke. At the heart of the Tudor dynasty's inception was Margaret Beaufort, a woman whose political sagacity and unyielding determination laid the foundation for her son Henry VII's ascent to the throne. In an age where women's political roles were constrained by societal norms, Lady Margaret navigated the tumultuous waters of late 15th century England with unparalleled skill. Her involvement in the Lancastrian cause, even amidst the Yorkist supremacy, her pivotal role in the orchestration of her son's return and claim to the throne, both show her spirit, her political foresight. But her legacy extends beyond her political maneuverings. Her patronage of education and the arts catalyzed a cultural renaissance that would flourish under her descendants. Then we have a woman like Mary, Queen of Scots, a tale of sovereignty contested, of ambition, tragedy, and the pursuit of the English crown. Her claim to the English throne, rooted in her Tudor bloodline, positioned her as both a beacon of hope for Catholic restoration and a focal point of political intrigue. Mary's actions, from her tumultuous reign in Scotland to her forced abdication and subsequent imprisonment in England, reveal a woman embroiled in the complex power dynamics of a divided Britain. Her enduring influence, even from the confines of her captivity, shows her political acumen and the loyalty that she commanded among her supporters. People just loved her. Her supporters just loved her. At the same time, a woman who was not thrilled with the love people had of Mary, Queen of Scots, was Bess of Hardwick, whose husband was Mary's jailer, and that caused a lot of marriage problems between them. Bess of Hardwick is the paragon of self-made authority and influence. I just love her. She ascended from modest beginnings to becoming the second most wealthy woman in England and one of the most influential women in Elizabethan England. Strategic acumen and indomitable will characterize her. Through a series of judicious marriages and then actually fighting for her rights that were due her when people didn't necessarily want to give them to her, for example, when a husband died and she had to fight for her dowry and her jointure, Bess managed to amass considerable wealth and social standing, positioning herself as a central figure in the Elizabethan court. Her legacy, however, is not merely measured in wealth, but her contributions to the architectural and cultural landscape of the era. She built Hardwick Hall, which was an architectural marvel at the time. They said Hardwick Hall more glass than wall because of the windows that she built, which were so very new. The grand hallway that was just sunlit was amazing for people. It was an architectural marvel. So in looking at these women, Margaret Beaufort, Mary Queen of Scots, and Bess of Hardwick, we uncover the multifaceted ways in which women of the Tudor period could navigate and influence the political and cultural currents of their time. Their stories are marked by personal ambition and strategic marriages, and also unwavering loyalty to their causes. And they offer a little bit more of a nuanced perspective on the power dynamics and social structures of Tudor England. These women not only shaped the course of history, but also paved the way for future generations to challenge and redefine the boundaries of female influence in a male-dominated world. Now let's talk about intellectual and cultural influence. In a world where political intrigue and royal pageantry often dominated the historical narrative, a select group of women carved out spaces of intellectual and cultural influence that defied the constraints of their era. Through their literary and artistic contributions, these women not only enriched the cultural landscape of Tudor England, but also navigated and subtly contested the power structures that sought to confine them. For example, Margaret More Roper, a beacon of erudition. She was the daughter of Sir Thomas More. She stands as a testament to the intellectual vibrancy of Tudor women. Educated by her father in a range of disciplines, from classical languages to philosophy, Margaret emerged as one of the most learned women of her time. Her proficiency in Greek and Latin allowed her to engage with the works of leading scholars. She translated Erasmus's works. She engaged in correspondence with the intellectual elite. Her writings, though constrained by the societal expectations that dictated how women participated in public discourse, they still reflect a profound understanding and subtle critique of the political and religious upheavals of her time. Margaret's legacy transcends her literary contributions, embodying the potential for intellectual pursuit and expression within the private spheres allotted to Tudor women. Then we also have Mary Sidney Herbert, Countess of Pembroke. She carved her niche within the cultural milieu of Elizabethan England through her patronage and her poetic prowess. She was sister to the famous Sir Philip Sidney. She was imbued with a deep appreciation for literature and the arts from a young age, and her home at Wilton House became a sanctuary for writers, for artists, scholars, fostering a vibrant cultural scene that rivaled the court itself. Mary's own literary contributions, notably her completion of Philip's translation of the Psalms, exhibit her mastery of language and her capacity to imbue traditional forms with personal and political nuance. Through her patronage and her poetry, Mary Sidney Herbert demonstrated the profound impact that a woman could wield in shaping the cultural landscape, challenging the notion of the passive female patron. Then we have Lady Jane Grey. Her brief interlude on the English throne is often overshadowed by the political machinations that placed her there and the tragic end that befell her. Yet, beyond the political pawn, Jane Grey was actually a woman of deep learning and conviction. She was educated alongside her male peers, and her scholarship in classical and contemporary languages, coupled with her keen interest in religious reform, positioned her as a figure of intellectual prominence. Her reign, though fleeting in less than 2 weeks, offered a glimpse into the potential for female governance predicated on intellectual and moral authority. Lady Jane Grey's legacy then is twofold: a cautionary tale on the perils of political manipulation, and a beacon of the intellectual capabilities and cultural contributions of Tudor women. Through the lives of Margaret More Roper, Mary Sidney Herbert, and Lady Jane Grey, we look at the diverse avenues that women could exert their intellectual and cultural influence. Their contributions to literature and the arts, often achieved within the confines of their prescribed roles, challenge the narrative of female passivity and dependence in a male-dominated society. In their scholarship, patronage, and artistic expression, these women not only enriched the cultural fabric of their time, but also paved the way for future generations to assert their intellectual presence and cultural agency. Now let's talk about power in religion and education. Religious reform and the quest for knowledge lead to a complex pattern of power dynamics in which women played a pivotal yet often understated role. Amidst the seismic shifts of the Reformation and dissolution of the monasteries, a new landscape emerged, presenting both challenges and unprecedented opportunities for women to assert influence in the realms of education and religion. The Reformation saw women navigating the waters of faith with remarkable resilience and acuity. Figures like Catherine Parr, the sixth wife of Henry VIII, stand out for their contributions to religious discourse and reform. Catherine was a learned woman, deeply interested in the new Protestant faith, and she used her position as queen consort to foster religious discussions and patronize reformist scholars. Her works, Prayers or Meditations and The Lamentations of a Sinner, are notable for their evangelical zeal and for promoting the vernacular scripture, subtly influencing the religious direction of the court and beyond. Women like Anne Askew, though less politically powerful, wielded their knowledge and faith to challenge the established religious order. Anne was known for her staunch Protestant beliefs and engaged in the theological debates, was later, of course, martyred for her refusal to recant her views. Her story, recorded in John Bale's Examinations, highlights the capacity of women to engage with and shape religious discourse, even at great personal cost. The dissolution of the monasteries had far-reaching consequences beyond the religious and economic landscape. It inadvertently paved the way for new educational initiatives. With the monastic schools dissolved, there arose a pressing need for new educational institutions, a vacuum that saw contributions from both men and women of the Tudor era. Women like Lady Margaret Beaufort emerged as pioneers in fostering education. Of course, she was prior to the dissolution, but she had already established a precedent by founding two Cambridge colleges, Christ's and St. John's, which later became instrumental in promoting Renaissance humanism and religious reform. Her vision for education underscored the importance of learning as a tool for religious and moral betterment, a legacy that resonated in the educational landscape shaped post-dissolution. The dissolution also facilitated the redirection of wealth and resources towards the establishment of grammar schools and educational charities. Women of means, inspired by people like Lady Margaret, continued this educational renaissance either through direct patronage or by setting up scholarships and endowments, thereby ensuring that new Protestant ethos was propagated throughout the educated clergy and laity alike. So the power wielded by Tudor women in the spheres of religion and education was subtle, yet also significant. Through their writing, patronage, and philanthropy, they navigated the complexities of a changing religious landscape and contributed to the foundation of an educational system that emphasized moral and intellectual growth. In doing so, they not only influenced the religious and educational reforms of their time, but also laid the groundwork for future generations to explore and expand the boundaries of knowledge and faith. So this period, predominantly characterized by patriarchal structures and towering figures of male monarchs, is also rich with stories of women who navigated the complexities of power in a world designed to sideline their ambition. From the authority of queens regnant like Elizabeth and Mary, to the subtle manipulations and support systems enacted by queens consort and women behind the scenes, Tudor women demonstrated a wide array of strategies to assert their presence and influence. The queen's consort, often perceived merely as wives and mothers within the royal machinery, wielded their power with a blend of dignity, intelligence, and grace, contributing significantly to the political and cultural fabric of the court. Women like Catherine of Aragon and Anne Boleyn played pivotal roles in shaping the course of English history, not just as partners to a king, but as active participants in the kingdom's religious and political transformations. Catherine of Aragon, we sometimes forget, was regent when Henry was in France, and she basically won the Battle of Flodden against Scotland. So she was a warrior queen, just like her mother, Isabella. And of course, Anne Boleyn helped bring about the Protestant Reformation. Behind the grandeur of the throne, women like Margaret Beaufort and Bess of Hardwick operated within and beyond the court's intrigues, leveraging their wealth, lineage, and networks to secure their positions and influence future generations. Their strategic marriages and astute management of estates underscored the potential for women to exercise power in a male-dominated society. So there we have it, some of the more nuanced roles that women played in shaping the narrative of one of England's most dynamic and transformative periods. My friend, speaking of women, you know that myth about Anne Boleyn and her six fingers? There's a lot of Tudor myths, not just that one. And I am putting together a little Tudor myth-busting five-day challenge. It's one of the things I'm doing to celebrate the 15th anniversary of this podcast. So we're going to start on March 25th. It's for 5 days all week. There's going to be a live call on the 25th and then videos released every day, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, each one examining some aspect of myths around the Tudors, different people who are associated with different myths, and even the myths that the Tudors themselves created. So if you want to hop into this, oh, and then we're going to have another live call to finish it up on the Friday. So there's 5 videos, 2 live Zoom calls. There's worksheets and handouts with each video as well. If you want to join in on this myth-busting the Tudors 5-day challenge, I invite you to go to my website at englandcast.com. There's a big button right in the top right-hand corner that says myth-busting challenge or something like that. And you can click there and check it out. I'll also put a link here in the podcast notes. So again, I invite you to check it out. 5 days, myth-busting the Tudors. Oh, and it's only $17. So I wanted to make it really affordable for people to be able to do it. And this is an opportunity for me to go back and look at some of the myths that I inadvertently propagated during the 15 years I've been doing this podcast as well. Because looking back at some of my old episodes, I actually did engage in some of the myths that have been debunked. The most egregious one that I feel very bad about is having said that Margaret Beaufort was the mother-in-law from hell. And I said that in one of my very early episodes on her before I had really researched that much. And I was still going off of a certain historical fiction portrayal of her, which I have learned my lesson. So we will be looking at some of those myths. If you want to dive in and have a week-long 5-day challenge, Myth-Busting the Tudors, go to englandcast.com and check it out. And I hope I see you on the call on March 25th. All right, my friends, we will leave it there for today. Thank you so very much for joining me. Thank you for being here. I know you have a lot of options with podcasts, and I do appreciate the fact that you just spent the last 20 minutes with me. Thank you so very much. All right, I will be back next week with another Women's History Month episode. Have a wonderful week, my friends. Bye. Blow, northern wind, send for baby sweating. Blow, northern wind, blow, blow, blow. Ich hörte Burd in Bauerbrieg, hat Sully Samlis und sich. Mensch, cool, meiden auf mich, fern, fred.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
We're all looking to make more sustainable choices, but making your own shoes out of natural materials could pose a few challenges. At the Allbirds Innovation Lab, they're doing all the sciencey stuff like research and testing to create shoes from natural materials, like leather made from plants, eucalyptus tree fiber, and sugarcane. It's not rocket science, it's shoe science. Allbirds is making shoes better than natural. They're super natural. Find your perfect pair at Allbirds.com today. That's Allbirds.com.